Mr. Harold Stern, 135 Enbury Lane, Willow Grove, telephone 657-2372, tape 1, side 1, September 10th, 1981. This is Nora Levin interviewing. Harold, would you please tell me where you were born and when, and a little about your childhood, your home life in your hometown?
Okay. I was born August 31st, 1921, in the city of Frankfurt on the Main, in Germany. My parents were married just about a year, and it was the post-war period in Germany. At that time, it was very difficult to find apartments and to get settled, and they managed to find a place finally, I understand, on the third floor in the west end of Frankfurt, very close to the place where my grandparents lived. I'm talking about the father and mother of my mother. We lived there from 1921 till 1930. I went to school when I was 6 years old and went to a school.
State school.
It's called Vorschule. It's the elementary school system where you go for 4 years, and from there you proceed to a so-called middle school or a gymnasium if you want to pursue a professional education at the university.
Was this a government school or a school set up by the community of Frankfurt? It was not
a
Jewish school.
It's very unusual in Germany to go to a Jewish school unless you want a particular spirit or a particular type of education. In Frankfurt, it became a matter of necessity due to the fact that the Jewish students were thrown out of the public schools more and more as time went on.
But this was a public school that you went to?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. That was even before Hitler. That was from 1927 to 1931, and Hitler only got into power in 1933 when I already was attending the gymnasium.
Now, what was father's work at this time, Harold?
Well, it's a bit of a story. Conditions were very unsettled after the war, and my grandfather on my mother's side had a mica factory. Mm-hmm. Mica is a material, it's a mineral which is used in irons or in ovens to insulate heat from the outside, and it comes in sheets and gets split. In any case, my grandfather had that factory in the outskirts of Frankfurt together with somebody else who was very active at the local synagogue. And do you want the name of that factory?
No, that's not necessary.
It's not important.
No, just a feeling about the economic conditions.
My father worked there until he was a member of the board or whatever the equivalent is today, vice president. My mother also worked there off and on as a secretary. We had a maid, so it was no problem.
Did you have brothers, sisters?
No, I'm the only child. But the interesting part of that other story was, for today, the inflation got so bad that my grandfather lost his factory due to the economic conditions and had to give up his factory, and my father became a sales representative, and my grandfather continued being an agent for mica processing in some form or another. He dealt with England, I remember, even had an office one time in London, and
so the family managed fairly well
through
these adverse times.
My mother was very helpful in supporting my father in the business, and they worked together. I remember them going out late at night with important letters to the railroad station to send out the orders and information immediately to Silesia, where some of the factories were, or to the Rhineland, because if you didn't do that in those days, the competition was so fierce that there were always two people standing behind you with something new.
Frankfurt had a large Jewish community.
Frankfurt had had a population of 500,000. I don't recall how many Jewish families there are, but there were. But it was a substantial element in the city from way back, actually.
Yes, and old community.
And the Jewish population in Frankfurt had contributed tremendously to learning, to culture, to restoration of the old city. They were members of the Association of the Friends of the Old City. It was really a very liberal and friendly atmosphere. And
didn't Rosenzweig have his school there? And then Buber?
Yeah.
I think Frankfurt was the center. Did your parents...
We can look this up in a minute.
I think that's correct. Did your parents belonged to the Kultusgemeinde, I suppose?
Yes, of course. You had to... You paid taxes. It's in Germany, everybody paid taxes according to his religious classification. This doesn't mean that he paid taxes according to his religious beliefs, but he paid taxes because he belonged to a Catholic or a Jewish or a Protestant.
And in Frankfurt,
group.
Was this money
but
collected by the state?
The money was paid by the state all over Germany. It
was
called a Kultussteuer, which was a cult tax. From that tax, the state maintained the salary of the rabbis, the salary of all the
priests,
organizations, the priests and churches and whatever. I don't know to what degree they paid towards the maintenance of religious teaching organizations, but in those organizations people of course contributed also by way of the students who were sent to the school.
Tuition.
Mm-hmm. And
your parents belonged to what we would call the liberal or reform
segment. Yeah, it's a very funny story. My mother only went to the synagogue to please my father, who came from a very orthodox background, but he too had lost his father very early and grew up in Frankfurt. My grandmother, who had lived in Paderborn, Westphalia, where they had some kind of a store, moved with her four children to Frankfurt to join the rest of her family after the death of her husband, who had been considerably older. I never met him. And brought up those children in Frankfurt. And there were two boys and two girls. Now, they maintained a traditional life. My grandmother was a traditional woman, a very strict woman. She had to be and did a very good job. But then my father and his brother traveled a great deal before the war. They were in the United States and in South America on business. Mm-hmm. And there came a time when they were hardly home anymore in Frankfurt. So they got away from the tradition bit a little bit. Mm-hmm. And my mother grew up in a Jewish household that just was Jewish by classification and paid their taxes but mm-hmm. kept nothing.
Did you have any sort of Jewish education, Harold? Did you go to a Sunday school?
Well, yes, of course.
Yes.
That came later. Now,
I see.
We belonged to a liberal congregation which we went to, and it was a well-known synagogue, the West End Synagogue in Frankfurt, and it was a tremendously big place, a very modern place, very beautiful, had wonderful rabbis, cantorial art flourished, and of course they had a school too. Now when you go to school in Germany, at least at that time, you had religion. You had, with your three R's, you also had religion from the very beginning. There were two sessions a week where you had to go whether you liked it or not.
Did a rabbi come into the school?
No, there was a regular Jewish teacher who was even a director of one of the schools, co-director of one of that elementary school, who not only taught religion, but who also taught German and history, different subjects.
And this person was paid by the state?
This was a
regular
teacher under the teaching system. We must keep in mind that under the German system, everybody was recognized in his own right as a teacher. There was no such thing as anybody being of a different caliber for certain purposes. And
twice a week or so to the special class?
Well, it was in the school building.
Yes.
A certain class was set aside just for religion. For instruction, which was used by Catholics and Lutherans alike.
How many times a week did you attend this?
Oh, I would say about twice.
Did you learn any Hebrew, like Jim? Did you learn any Hebrew in this, or just history and...
No, at that early age I didn't. Mm-hmm. But I must say that when I started going to school being 6 years old, there were already some young people who had private lessons in Hebrew because their parents wanted it. And I must say, I didn't know what Hebrew was when I started school. So that was the situation there. And after my fourth year in elementary school, I went to the gymnasium because I was trying to go to the university later on. And that took place in 1930, before Hitler got into power in 1933. So I really had a very good German-type education at that humanistic gymnasium. It was the best school in Frankfurt, and went there with a lot of my friends.
That was also government, or was this a private gymnasium?
It's all government.
All government.
All government.
Now, what were your relations with non-Jewish children, Harold? Did you have non-Jewish friends, Jewish friends?
Well, it's I must say, overall, there were good relations.
With non-Jewish?
There were always some anti-Semites. Always. This is...
Ongoing.
this is a part of life in Germany as it is perhaps everywhere else. And under unpleasant economic conditions, this is coming out more openly than at other times. But generally speaking, we were about one-third Jewish in that class, and it was usually a good relationship, with the exception of with two really very fierce anti-Semites who were usually the bad sheep of the class mm-hmm. to begin with, and nobody took them very seriously. Mm-hmm. This changed in the course of time under the under Hitler propaganda, but
already
even then,
in the early 30s.
In the early times, there was no such problem. But I must say, there was one thing which sheds a little bit of light on the way things were in Germany. I was born during a year when there was a surplus of children in the post-war period, and that was in 1921, when apparently everybody had children. By the time I went to school, we have experienced this here too just recently, so by the time I went to school, the regular facilities of the state schools were insufficient to harbor everybody, and some of these classes, where there were usually four, had to have six six class accommodations. So our group was sent close by to a strictly Catholic establishment. And that was really a revelation. The Catholic people in that school and the students were absolutely anti-Semitic, strongly anti-Semitic. That is before Hitler, had nothing to do with Hitler, except maybe the party was coming up.
But this was religious
anti-Semitism.
But
this was an anti-Semitism ingrained in the Catholic population and fostered by parents and probably by the clergy too. We had constant fights.
Constant physical fights.
Oh yeah, constantly.
And you were
that
hurt.
That lasted for a year, mm-hmm. and then we went back to our own school where there were more Lutherans and the Protestants, so to speak, and there were fewer Catholics, and this whole situation eased up quite a bit. But of course, in the meantime, the Nazi Party became stronger, and the economic conditions for many people in Germany, especially for the laboring people, working people, became very, very difficult.
The depression.
The unemployment got worse and worse. The government was too weak, couldn't stop anything from getting worse. And with that, the rise of the Nazi Party and getting a hold of the students and young people was unfortunately inevitable with all their propaganda. So this carried on into the 1930s. Now, when I got into the gymnasium, the director of the school was half Jewish. He was very, very well known in Frankfurt as a strong liberal educator, and I really remember his speech welcoming the new class into his school, in which he said that all political tendencies would be strictly cut out from his school. little did he know what was going to happen to him, because within 4 years, he lost his job and he went to England and was interned and then committed suicide. It was a very difficult time for people who felt total acceptance, and that reversal, of course, was experienced by many thousands.
And your own parents' economic situation, was that damaged too in the early 30s?
Well, my father built up this business with the help of my mother, and unfortunately my father had a weak heart muscle from malaria that he had incurred in his travels abroad. He got very sick in 1929 and had a heart attack and pleurisy, and we could not stay in our apartment anymore, where he had to walk up three flights of steps, and we moved to a different apartment close to the city, where we occupied the first floor. After we had moved there in July, he had another heart attack and died in August 1930.
And how did mother then manage?
Well, my mother continued the business after a fashion. She was very well liked, and she even went traveling. She went to Darmstadt and Wiesbaden and Mainz, and things were a little bit easier. There were heavy sample cases involved, and I remember the carriers coming to the apartment, picking up the sample cases and having them ready for my mother to work with at the customer's place the next morning. It really was a system which we
very methodical, and
which we could learn from, maybe.
I'm sure.
But nobody wants to do that kind of work anymore, of course.
It was all very systematic.
And it was a smaller city, and everything was much easier to come by.
And so you began to feel the more vehement anti-Semitism in the early 30s. Were you aware of any Jews already trying to leave the country in 32 or 33?
Yeah, well, Hitler came into power only in 1933. So after I had gone to the gymnasium for about 3 years, it was only then in April of 1933 that we had the first boycott action. You are familiar with that.
And was mother's business affected by
that? Well, we didn't have a store, so my mother's business was at that time not affected. But as the years went by, towards the 36-37 period, when it came, really, my mother carried on quite well until the Nuremberg laws.
35.
Are you sure it's
September 35?
Yeah. Well, it was after that that
she
the economic pressures mounted, because some of the customers could no longer receive Jewish representatives, couldn't work with Jewish people anymore, and by the same token, the manufacturers could not keep their Jewish representatives, because it was bad for business and
illegal.
Well, the pressures were there.
Pressures were there.
And eventually it actually did become illegal to employ anybody.
Did she have to give up the business?
Yeah.
She
had to.
And how then did you manage economically?
Well, it really, we must have had some money.
Some savings.
Yeah. And we had a nice apartment, and we had a maid up to 1938, and The maid had to leave because at one point I had to turn 16 and you could not have a non-Jewish woman in a household with a 16-year-old so-called man. Mm.
You were in school until 16?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Until 15.
Until 15.
And
were you forced to leave school?
I was and I wasn't. As the times progressed, more and more Jewish people left Germany. I happened to be in contact with people who had connections to Switzerland and France and England and America, with Frankfurt being so close to the western border and all that trade going on. A lot of people, fortunately, were connected. But I lost quite a few friends who had to leave overnight. Their parents lost, well, their parents had money outside, and the Gestapo got a hold of that information, and they got a warning. A very good friend of mine just left overnight with his parents. Mm. And it took years till we met again. Mm. It was a matter of a tightening net, or a ever more closing circle. Nobody expected to be exterminated,
of course not.
But it was, the writing was on the wall. And as I went through school, there were fewer and fewer Jewish boys in that school. I was one of the few because I didn't especially like to go to make a change still before leaving Germany, and I wasn't really too badly off or persecuted, and it
Your
was
Your teachers weren't too hostile?
Most of the teachers were very nice. They were, some of them were from the old guard, Prussian officers, fairly decent people. There was something like, I remember my Latin class, for instance. When I first started out with Latin, I did very, very poorly. I just couldn't relate to Latin at all. And apparently that teacher was furious at me. He knew I could do better, and I simply fell flat on my face. And he had me put right in front of his desk. In every Latin class, which was at least once a day,
yeah.
I had to change seats with somebody else. And I always thought that the guy did it because he was experimenting with his Jews. Mm. He didn't say so, and he was very successful with me. I did very well in the end.
He was really trying to help you.
And I was his pride and joy after a while, but
I think it was a start which was
semi-political.
Very interesting.
And then we had a man who was the math teacher who taught at the University of Frankfurt, and he was a teacher who should have stayed with the university. He was a very bad math teacher for gymnasts. Gymnasts is the wrong word, for people who were in their early years attending the gymnasium.
For the adolescents.
And he was almost abstract. And he was always very, very nice to the Jewish students and joked with them and
made them feel comfortable.
Fraternized and was very nice to the mothers and mm-hmm. parents in general. And the school had a country home, in the mountains near Frankfurt. It's called the Taunus. And the classes went up there once a year for a week. And then we could also go on vacation any time. There was a vacation, we could go to that country home. And he was there, and it was very, very nice, but he was the first man who came in with a swastika on his sleeve. The first one of all of the teachers.
What year
with
was this?
With a big smiling face, and the other teachers laughed at him too.
What year was this, would you suppose, Harold? 37?
36, 37.
And did his attitude toward you change?
Not really.
That's interesting.
Not really.
This is side two, tape one, continuing our interview with Mr. Harold Stern. Eventually, you say,
eventually all teachers came in with a swastika on their sleeve. It was compulsory. They entered the class and everybody had to go up, get up from his seat, from his desk, and stand there and raise his hand and say, Heil Hitler.
Including the Jewish students, of course.
Yeah. And I remember distinctly there was a man who came from the Rhineland who had a very strange pronunciation, and everybody made fun of him, especially the way he said Heil Hitler. And some people said 3 liter, which means 3 liters, and others imitated him. But there was one Jewish boy who was a little bit slow at one point and got caught in imitating him. he didn't do much about it, though.
He wasn't really a fervent Nazi then?
It was still at a time when things were a little bit easier.
And apparently Frankfurt was a fairly liberal community.
It was liberal.
Yes.
It was probably ranking next behind Berlin in humanism,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in the feeling of internationalism. I would say perhaps Hamburg was the third city where people tried to keep up a front of decency.
Mm-hmm.
And
so when did you leave school then?
Well, then we got a director. Of course, long since then, the half-Jewish director had left, and we got a real Nazi as a director. He had short cropped hair, he walked around with his swastika, he had his scars from his student years.
Mm.
It was just, the man was like, in a movie about Germany, you couldn't have cast him any better.
Mm.
And then people, dissensions arose between the Jewish students and the other students, and there were there was that little episode, for instance, where they played with marbles, and when the Gentile students took away the marbles of the Jewish students in the schoolyard in the play, nothing happened. But when the Jewish students won in the marble game, then one guy one time got so upset about it that he started crying. And at that time, the director was walking through the schoolyard during intermission, and that man went to that pupil and said to him, if the Jewish guys give you any trouble, just let me know. Mm. That was one episode. And then some other time we had music lessons together with another group, with another class, but the same level, because as I explained before, there were so many people then, and you had three or four classes together. Each class was about 30, 35 people, and we went to the music hall, or what do you call it, in the school, the
auditorium,
exactly, where by that time we didn't learn anything about music or harmony, but all the music consisted of Nazi songs. Mm. And I had been in the school choir up to a certain time, and then when it changed to a point where you only sang these stupid Nazi songs, I resigned from it. Mm. On that particular day, they had on the agenda a song which was anti-Jewish, not particularly anti-Jewish, but it had two verses, and in there which were anti-Jewish, the rest was very patriotic, and I didn't sing the anti-Jewish verses, and I didn't think much about it, and as I left the schoolyard afterwards with my bicycle, the super Nazis of the class waylaid me and beat me up. Mm. This was, I don't know whether it was because I didn't sing the Nazi verses, but because probably the song had inflamed them. Mm. Well, I finally left that school and went to the Philanthropien for 6 months. The Philanthropien
in
Frankfurt.
Excuse me, this was 38?
No, that was
when you left the gymnasium.
I would say 1935.
I see.
And then went for 6 months to the Philanthropien, which was the Jewish school, where I was reunited with a lot of my former friends and people I knew on the outside from sports activities. And I learned there an awful lot, and I was really sorry that I hadn't left earlier.
This was a Jewish studies program, essentially, plus...
No, it was the Jewish school in Frankfurt. There were two Jewish schools in Frankfurt that were famous all over Germany. One is the Philanthropien, and the other one is the Samson Raphael Hirsch School. Mm-hmm. And if you want to have a book on the Philanthropien, I can give you that too.
Very
can you read German? It
yes.
is
yes.
written in German,
yes,
written by all the teachers and different people, and it's really
interesting.
A good source material. Good. Anyway.
You stay there for 6 months.
Yeah, and with the situation the way it was no longer a matter of trying to go to college or university afterwards, because there were no more students allowed in the colleges, mm-hmm. Jewish students. So from a practical point of view, I was supposed to learn something or get into something that I could use later on non-professionally or going abroad. I wanted very much to go into learning how to make shoes. What happened was, already at that time, people were giving up their businesses left and right. A non-Jewish company couldn't and wouldn't employ anybody Jewish anymore. And so I found the parents of a friend of mine who had one of the big shoe companies in Germany. It's a very well-known brand. And they took me in as an apprentice. Now, I wanted very much to be on the practical side of shoe manufacturing, because everybody said you have to know something practical when you leave Germany. But my mother put a stop to it and got me into the commercial part of the factory. It was unfortunately a mistake, but she didn't realize it well enough at the time. I got in there in spite of the vice president, who said that it was not the vice president, who was Aryan, non-Jewish, and who even lived in my street, that he did not advise non-Jewish people to be employed anymore in that factory.
Jewish.
Well, yeah, Jewish. He didn't want it anymore, and he thought it was unwise.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose by that time they had directives from the Chamber of Commerce, which was of course under the Nazi Party,
mm-hmm.
and but the Jewish owners prevailed and got me in there. And the factory was in Höchst near IG Farben. And I had to get up very early in the morning and take a train from Frankfurt to Höchst to be there at 9 o'clock and look after things. Excuse me. And
now, Harold, before we continue, I wonder if we could go back, since we've talked this afternoon about several other experiences, which I'd like very much for you to recount on tape. Can you tell me again a little about your holiday in Italy in the summer of 1935 and the so-called shadows that you began to feel? I had said this seemed to be a carefree holiday, and you didn't agree.
Well, already at that time, Germany and Italy cooperated quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
politically. However, the big thing in Europe at the time was the preparation of Mussolini's invasion of Abyssinia. And the school I went to for this vacation was a great big villa overlooking a fishing port on the Ligurian Riviera close to Genoa.
And the name of the school?
The name,
please.
Villa La Palma in Recco. The little town was called Recco. It was a very picturesque place. It had, it lived from the sea, on the sea. It had a beach. On Sundays they had lovely concerts in the village square that we went to. And it was a just picturesque, beautiful setting.
Could you feel any fascist tone or force in Italian life? Of course, you were very
well,
young.
Well, we were secluded in so far that we were under very strict supervision at the school,
mm-hmm.
and all activities had been structured.
Mm-hmm.
We were never on our own, except once in a while we would go out to the little village on our own, but this too was a 20 minutes walk, and you had to walk up a very steep hill coming back.
So you were very much secluded.
But we did have contact in so far that we bought little things in the village, like ice cream. And with our limited Italian, we couldn't go very far.
You were saying, I think earlier, that the head of the school.
The head of the school was a German Jewish privatdozent, so to speak. He was a professor from a university who had lost his job as a Jew, on top of which he was suffering from a disease that caused him tremendous tremors. Mm-hmm. He was comparatively young and he had a little boy at that time. He was about 6 years old, I would say. And he and his wife took over that villa and made a school out of it with a staff of former German teachers, partially Jewish, partially non-Jewish. Mm-hmm. But if they were non-Jewish, they were anti-Nazi. Mm-hmm.
And you went to the school with an all-Jewish group?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I went to that school with several friends from my school in Frankfurt, mm-hmm. and a young man who was half-Jewish.
Now, we also talked during the interlude about some friends of yours or acquaintances or families who were leaving for Palestine. Were you and mother at all thinking about going to Palestine during the late or middle 30s?
No, we could never think of it. First of all, my mother still had her business, mm-hmm. and she still had her father and sister living in Frankfurt, whom she was supporting.
I
myself was going to school, and she was not about to interrupt that either. Mm-hmm. For a woman alone with a business and being established and family connections,
and responsibilities,
we were still comparatively untouched, mm-hmm. directly by what was going mm-hmm. on, although the atmosphere in general was becoming less and less attractive.
Tell me a little more about the Zionist school that your friend went to, that you thought of going to, or someone thought of of your going to.
This school was in Herlingen near Ulm. People sent their children there from all over Germany in preparation of Aliyah. It was a very strict school. Of course, Hebrew was taught, and it was a little bit on the Spartan side. Mm-hmm. People would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and take cold showers. And my mother went there after they thought, she and several other parents thought, I should go there with their children. She took it upon herself to take the trip to Bavaria to look at the school over herself. And when she got there and saw what was going on and everything, she said, this is not for Harold. Consequently, nobody went, by the way.
Oh.
And it was a
good... She brought her report home to the community.
It was a good thing that it happened that way. First of all, the school was later on totally surrounded and closed by the Nazis, which was a bad experience for anybody who was there, of course. And then some of the people who were going to be with me had to leave Germany overnight. And it was a good thing that they were with their parents in Frankfurt and could take off when the gong sounded.
Did you have any direct contact with the Zionist movement in Frankfurt?
Not me personally, but there are many people who belong to a Zionist youth group. Mm-hmm. It was called the IPD, which is a German abbreviation for Jüdische Pfadfinder Deutschlands. It means Jewish Boy Scouts of Germany, but it was a definitely Zionist-oriented organization.
And were considerable numbers of Jewish youth?
Absolutely.
Members?
The others were in something called Schwarzes Fähnlein, which means black pennant. Mm-hmm. Also a big organization which operated under the auspices of the Reichsbund Jüdischer Frontsoldaten, which was the veterans. Organization of former Jewish soldiers.
War veterans.
War veterans, yeah.
Was there also a Blaue Weiss group in Frankfurt? Blue-white group?
Blaue Weiss I only know as a sports organization.
A Jewish sports organization?
I don't recall this. Ah. It's possible that it existed, but right now I don't.
In other cities of Germany, apparently, it was a Zionist group. Maybe more so between the wars, in 1918, 20.
Blau Weiss brings up thoughts of a football team. I mean, the soccer team, really.
Mm-hmm.
Bavarian.
All right, now I think we can move to... you made some reference to Dover Court also in, I think, 36. You spent
yes.
a vacation there.
Yes.
And can you tell me a little about that?
My English teacher in Frankfurt had relatives in Dover Court, who knew somebody with a boarding house. And this lady took in maybe 8 to 10 Jewish young men from Germany with the objective of learning English before they emigrated. However, with all these German boys there, they of course only spoke German because they didn't know enough English to make it very easy on themselves. Mm-hmm. Consequently, we learned very little English, but it was very nice to be on the beach.
You were there for several weeks?
Yeah, maybe four, five or six weeks. Some of them had connections in London and went to London for a week or for a few days and came back. It was interesting. We could walk one night we went down to the harbor in Harwich and looked at the ships and all that.
And was Mother perhaps thinking of sending you to England or trying to get you to England?
Well, we were forever thinking of getting out of Germany somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this excursion
mm-hmm.
was conceived with the possible thought that you would
for everybody. Oh yes, mm-hmm. By 1936 people were actively
mm-hmm.
Working on getting out of Germany mm-hmm. any way they could, if there was any possibility at all.
And the German government, the Nazi government in 35 and 36, when you took these summer vacations,
yes.
were not restricting you in any way,
apparently. Oh no, we couldn't take out any money. We went out with 10 marks, which was what everybody took out.
No, I mean for the summer excursions.
They were not restricting us, no.
You could spend money in the summers of 35 and 36.
No, we couldn't take any money out anymore,
well, how
except
were you,
10 marks.
How were you being supported?
Well, somebody in England had relatives in Frankfurt, and we gave that money to relatives in Frankfurt. And instead of supporting their relatives from England in Frankfurt, they paid towards that boarding house in Dover Court, and we paid toward the maintenance of that party in Frankfurt.
All right, and now we'll resume the story of your work in the shoe manufacturing factory.
Okay.
You were saying that you had to get up very early in order
yeah.
to make the train.
There was a great deal of chicanery involved. They of course wanted me to be out of there, to get out of the factory. There were still Jewish employees, and many of them relatives of the owners, who were three brothers,
mm-hmm.
and they had cousins and nephews and friends in there in various positions. A lot of the salesmen were still there, Jewish, until they later on lost their job. they put me into a department called, you would call it the filing department, which was a tremendously big office with very high shelves of folders for each customer. And I had to come in the morning, open the mail, sort the mail, and in the evening, when letters had been written that had to be signed by the executives, each letter was put into a separate page of a folder, of a big folder, and I had to present this folder to the owner, one of the owners, who in turn looked it over, signed it, and I would turn the page to the next letter. Mm-hmm. When these pieces were signed, I took it back to the filing department, which also served as a postal area for the company, and they sent out several hundred letters a day. They had to be put into envelopes and then put through a machine which at one and the same time folded the envelopes, sealed them, and stamped them also. Then the whole thing went into a basket and was taken out.
So how was the atmosphere for you, Harold?
Unpleasant. Leading people were in cahoots against the Jewish, the new Jewish arrival, and kept me in this department where there was nothing to learn, deliberately for 9 months. Nobody had ever been in this department that long. It was mind-killing.
Monotonous.
The top man would call out the name of a customer in a little town in Germany, and I would have to go and run and get this file for him and bring it to him, take others back. And no apprentice had ever been this long there. The idea is that you circulate from department to department. Well, I finally had enough of that and really got into another department, which was the billing department, where the atmosphere was very much more pleasant.
With the same company?
With the same company, and from there I went into the order department, where I was processing orders, and that was very much nicer too. Mm-hmm. Whenever you worked with simple people and equal people on the scale of employment, they all were very nice. It was the higher ups that gave you trouble.
You felt anti-Semitism from the higher levels?
Not overt. It was disguised under a type of Germanic humor that you don't find anywhere else. I must say that the Jewish salesman who came in from time to time participated in this, because the position of an apprentice in a German commercial establishment is like that of a pariah to begin with. And with this tradition behind them and having to go through it, it's like going through hazing at a college. So unfortunately, they didn't know what they were doing, and some of them were caught in Germany with a very unhappy ending.
How long did you stay in this apprenticeship?
I stayed in it for 15 months, because eventually the company was so-called Aryanized. The owners went to America, and there was really no point in staying any longer, because they would have kicked me out anyway. And they were very happy and relieved when I handed in my resignation. They gave me a very nice testimonial and were very nice with regard to restitution. And many years later, they must have dug into their files, 25 years old, to come up with the proof that I worked there and how much I had earned, and were very, very helpful. And I must say, so were the people that my mother represented in Germany. Many years later, they showed a lot of interest and friendship.
And helped to
absolutely
confirm her account of what happened. And so this takes us to what point in time now? You resigned when?
Well, I was 15 years old when I left school. That was in 1936. This was probably Easter 1936. I was in England later on, started. It's a little bit hard to reconstruct it like that.
Sometime late in 37?
I think late in 1937.
And what did you do?
Well, then when when I left the shoe factory, there was nothing I could do. And in order, nobody would employ me anymore, and something had to be done. I started to study Spanish with a refugee from Barcelona who had married a German insurance executive who was, of course, on the side, and they must have been on the side of Franco, which in those days you didn't ask much about and didn't question, because the middle class was unpolitical, especially when you were Jewish.
Why did you want to study Spanish?
Well, it was always a good idea that when you left Germany, not knowing where you would end up, Spanish might have been important, just as English was.
You already knew a good bit of English by this time.
Yeah.
And so what did you then do?
Well, I tried to get a job the worst way. I went to even to Offenbach, to the leather factories, which were mostly in Jewish hands, but everybody was giving up.
Was the Jewish community helping to set up vocational training programs?
There was a vocational art school, yes, a very good art school, as a matter of fact, and people came from all over Germany to Frankfurt. But my situation was in flux. I had left employment.
You had had an apprenticeship.
No, it was all interrupted, and you just can't go into an art school without a program in the middle of the season, so to speak.
See, you couldn't go into that.
In fact, Frank.